Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Bell, welcome to another episode of Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. And tonight we are talking about fire and fire festivals. And I got started thinking about this when Selena Fox did her show on one of the shows on Beltane, and of course it comes up in discussions that revolve around Beltane and the other greater pagan festivals of the year, because it usually involves fire. And while this is not something that is celebrated by everyone who follows a pagan path, for many people, these particular Sabbats or seasonal celebrations have been absorbed into many pan-pagan practices. Even though their origins are Celtic, so even if you personally do not work with any Celtic deities, chances are if you are participating in now or you've participated in the past in Beltane or Lunasod or Samhain festivals, well, they do have their origins in Celtic practices, ancient Celtic practices. Now, of course, we have morphed these and modernized these, but in some way, shape, or form, we do honor the passing of these seasons with fire. So many people are familiar with these particular Sabbats and the fact that fire is involved. At the very least, people have some sort of activity around a big bonfire, but that's only one example of one kind of practice. And as I got thinking about it more and more, I was remembering back about a show that we saw over, must have been over the winter.
Yeah.
When we're, and everybody else, was stuck inside, even more so because of the pandemic, and it was about Spain, and
It was about the path, the trail.
Yeah.
That goes along the coast. I forget the name of the trail. They talk about St. Joseph's Day.
Right, and so this is only, you know, so that particular show focused on this particular trail that goes through the northern part of Spain from east to west, and the people that were narrating this stopped at a number of different places along the way and talked about some of these different festivals.
The Camino de Santiago was the name of the trail.
Okay. And along that trail, it goes through different regions of Spain, and one of them one of these towns talks about a particular festival called Las Falas, and then it got me started thinking about all these others, and including in that same show, they ended up in a different part of Spain, in the Pyrenees, and it wrapped up by talking about these other festivals that occur at a different time of the year at the summer solstice. So I thought it would be a good time to talk about different fire festivals that occur around the world. And there are a lot. I am trying to not completely go down a rabbit hole, and it's easy to do when you start reading about all these cool places in different parts of the world and what they do and how long they've been doing them. I kept it focused on mostly Europe, but there is one I'm going to talk about at the very end. So with regard to this discussion, I thought I would talk a little bit about these first fire festivals. And again, the reason why I wanted to find out more about them is we saw this show. It was in the wintertime. It was Spain. And, you know, it was made a couple years ago, and it was all beautiful, and they went to these archaeological sites, and they went to this other town, and then ended up in the eastern part of the country. And in the eastern part of the country, as it turns out, and, of course, with an hour-long show, you can only talk about so much, right? So when I was doing research for this, as it turns out, the show talked about one location in Spain where they do this particular fire festival around the summer solstice. But as it turns out, there's a whole region within the eastern part of Spain in a region called the Pyrenees. It's a mountain chain that separates or that straddles France and Spain.
Right.
And so it is no surprise. Huh?
No, it's not Galicia, is
no,
it?
No, Galicia is the other end of the country.
It's further up and over around the bend on of the coast there of Spain.
So
yeah.
The Pyrenees Mountains.
They're closer to, they're more to the east.
Right, they are in the east of
yeah,
the country.
They, right, like you say,
right.
The border, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
So the Pyrenees Mountains are a mountain chain that straddles the south of France and the easternmost region of Spain. And to the south is the Mediterranean Sea. To give you some understanding of geography. And so as I started looking at this, I discovered that, in fact, there is not just one place, that there are a number of locations within the Pyrenees Mountains. It's called Falas del Pirineo. Falas de, let me try it again. Falas del Pirineo. And Pirineo is Spanish for Pyrenees. And what is nice is that when you click on a nifty button, it will auto-translate into
yeah.
English so that poor, sad people like me don't butcher the language. So what is the deal with these festivals within the Pyrenees Mountains? Well, it's been going on for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And this mountain range is the home to a bunch of valleys, dozens of valleys, and within these valleys, these people were isolated from each other, and fire became a form of communication.
Signals, yeah.
Right. But within this whole larger range, there are regions that are part of Aragon, Catalonia, Andorra, and also in the south of France, which is interesting. And so it's not just Spain. It's actually really more about that region.
Region, yeah.
It's the region that does this. And so as it turns out, there are more than 60 towns within this whole area that perform these types of fire festivals, and they all occur around the summer solstice.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of their practices are identical. There are some subtle differences, but one of the big themes is celebrating and honoring the sun. And it is difficult to say when these practices first started. They've been doing some version of these for hundreds of years. Now, of course, this year and last year, because of the pandemic, things have been suspended, but prior to last year, they would have occurred within a few days of each other all around the summer solstice. And, of course, this is a time for people to, you know, party and have a good time. But one of the things that is very similar is that you'll have torch processions, and one of the things that has also happened over the years is that although it does fall around the summer solstice, it has morphed into to be part of and to occur around the Feast of San Juan, which is June 23rd and 24th of every year. So they go to the top of a mountain and they descend the mountain with lighted torches, and they go to a square, like the town square, and they dance, and then they, you know, light the ritual fire that honors the longest night of the year. And so here's just a few of the different places. In Aragon, this is the only place where they maintain the tradition with this so-called La Corrida de la Falleta. And on June 23rd at sunset, they will move to the so-called Planeta de la Falla. And this is where they share dinner until nightfall. And then at nightfall, they light the torches to begin the scent down to the town.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is in Aragon. There's and the region where they do this is the Sobrarbe, S-O-B-R-A-R-B-E. Sobrarbe.
Yeah.
I know, we're so sad with our production.
Where?
Up here.
Oh.
Yeah. Other towns have more spectacular festivals.
Sobrarbe. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. In another town, they'll have their big party on the weekend closest to the night of San Juan. Um, And in yet another town, the bonfire is lit at the top of the mountain, and there's a dirt road. It guides the fire serpent in which grandparents, mainly grandparents and grandchildren, participate.
Yeah.
So this one's a little bit different. And each person or family is responsible for preparing their own fire, usually with dried herbs that are lit at the main fire, and then again they go down to the town square. And some make wishes and celebrate with the party. So, again, there are subtle differences, but they have, there's usually some sort of procession, and people will meet at a town square. A big part of this is also dinner. And so they have, again, these are old practices. These are regional things that occur throughout the year. And and what's also really interesting about this, and this is not the only place that's UNESCO related. I'll talk about that in just a second. But the Fallas del Pirineo and the Las Fallas, I think the double L, is it the double L is supposed to be the A-Y?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. Laura Gonzalez will...
Correct you. She'll correct you.
I'll get corrective feedback, but that's all right.
Yeah.
The Festival of the Pyrenees and the Festival of San Jose in Valencia, which is also called Las Fallas. They are...
Was it March?
Yes. This is what's really unique about them. They're designated as intangible cultural heritage by UNESCO. So not only is Las Fallas, or Fallas, the Pyrenees fire festivals, all of them, like the whole group in the whole region, were designated as intangible cultural heritage by UNESCO. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Again, so if you at some point we will be able to travel easier again. And in which case, if you want to celebrate summer solstice in a different way, this sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And they all revolve around the Pyrenees. Fire festivals all revolve around people starting at the top of a mountain near the town where they live.
Valencia's different.
Yes, and I'll talk about that in just a minute.
Yeah.
And then they have some sort of procession down into the town with, paths of fire where people are carrying torches. They might be made out of different kinds of woods or specific wood or herbs or whatever. And then when you get down to the town square, there's music and dancing and eating and all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah. And some of them, they'll throw torches into the water, into the ocean, or they use them to light, they'll light the big bonfire stuff. And there's a whole thing. And, of course, it's all at night, so it's really cool to see. The documentary we were watching, the show we were watching about Spain and that trail, I mean, that was really like really neat. And
I would
started poking around like what it would take to take a trip. You know, in a couple of years when things are safer to travel and
right, so
down a bit.
It's
yeah.
You know, it's the cold time of the year and we're stuck inside because it's cold and we're stuck inside because of COVID and we're starting to get a little stir crazy.
Itchy feet.
Yes, and itchy feet, and then we see this really cool show on on Spain and this trail that you could take, and of course every day the weather was beautiful and you know too, so that didn't help things. So that is one, and it's not just one place, it's a bunch of places in a region, and they do a variety of different kinds of similar things, but you know there are subtle differences. Now, what's different, though, the show talked about someplace else that was on the trail. It was in Valencia, Spain, which is farther to the west. And this event occurs between the 15th and 19th of March. But when I was reading about it, and again, it's difficult to not go down a rabbit hole and read about all these cool things that they do in this one particular town.
It was actually from the 1st to the 19th.
Right. And so
yeah,
some of the quote-unquote, the bigger activities
yeah.
occur between the 15th and the 19th
right.
of March.
I think start on the 1st.
Right. And so it's essentially nearly an entire month.
Good 20 days of fire celebration.
Yeah, and festivals. And what it started out as, and it likely started sometime in the Middle Ages, and artisans and carpenters would make things over the winter. And when they got rid of their wood, it was usually in the spring. And as part of the activities to welcome spring, and again, so this is one example of something that revolved around an equinox type of time period, but not really exclusively. In Spain, it's pretty obvious that in that part of the world, it starts to get noticeably warmer
yeah.
by that time
yeah.
of the year. And it may have just been coincidence, but it may have, you know, there might have been some other things going on there. But it started off pretty simple, and then over hundreds of years, it got more complex. And so over time, people started taking the wood and making it into things.
But because the carpenters and the people would like, they would throw all this wood that they'd used over the winter into a fire, and they would add rags and stuff to it for the bonfire, and it started to take on a human-like appearance. So being the sense of humor and irony that they have, these look like people, so let's make things that look like people. And they start, and that's now they craft these things that look like caricatures of people.
Right, and it's really gorgeous, elaborate stuff. And as part of that, they have different activities where there are fireworks, there's award giving
yeah.
for the best looking caricatures. There's a big procession into the main plaza, and it all culminates on the Crema, which takes place on March 19th. And so, not surprisingly, that sounds like to cremate or to burn.
To burn.
Yeah. So everything's got to get burned by that, at the end of that day.
Yeah.
And so at 10 p.m., the small monuments start getting burned, and then at midnight, the big ones go up in flames. Except for the first prize winner, which is burned at 12:30 a.m., and, you know, of course, there's going to be lots of partying and eating and feasting and fireworks and all sorts of really cool stuff. So this is essentially nearly a month-long festival. So reasons were different, but it has taken on this huge persona of just a big festival that occurs in that region at that time of the year. And again, we're watching this. It's beautiful outside in the documentary, and it's warm, and there, you know, there's no cold weather going on there, and we're stuck in our house in the winter, and we're like, okay, what does it take? And then so David gets out, you know, he opens up the laptop, and he starts looking at flight information on what it would cost.
Car rentals and hotels and, yeah.
It was really funny. But anyway, so there is a whole country.
And that you've only talked about Spain.
I've only talked about Spain so far. And the other places are, here's a couple of other places that I thought were really interesting. And so we're going to go north a little bit and hop over the English Channel and talk about what goes on in the UK and in Scotland and in a part of Scotland called Shetland. It's the Shetland Islands. So one of the things that does happen, and it still happens, and apparently it was kind of amended somewhat last year because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I'd heard about this for years. And I'd sort of forgotten about it until I was reading about it on the list of fire festivals. And one of these is called Bonfire Night. It's also called Guy Fawkes Night.
Okay.
Yeah. And Guy, G-U-Y, Fawkes, F-A-W-K-E-S, he was a Catholic. He was one of a group of plotters involved in this plot. It was called the Gunpowder Plot. And it was a plot to blow up the House of Parliament in 1605. And for anybody who knows anything about English history,
like we all do,
I mean, haven't we all watched The Tudors? In the U.S., we don't as much, but some people do.
Right.
And after Queen Elizabeth I died in, I want to say, 1602, 1603, something like that, the king, the person who who came to power after that, who Parliament said was going to succeed Elizabeth I, was King James I. So he was King James VI of Scotland and King James I of England. That's how the country got united. Now, one of the big problems, though, was that during the time of Henry VIII, who was Elizabeth I's father, they were Catholic before that. Famous thing that happened, he broke from the Catholic Church, started his own form of Protestantism that took on a different flavor and was more in line with being true Protestantism by the time Queen Elizabeth I was queen. And so after that, the tradition was always that the king or queen, the ruler of England or the UK, would be Protestant. People were pissed about it. People didn't like it. And there was a lot of harm done to Catholics who wanted to remain Catholic. And so there's the background of why this thing happened in the first place. So this was a plot, and it was found out because the Guy Fawkes, like a dummy, sent a letter to his friend that was in Parliament to warn him, hey, we're going to blow up the building. Can you make sure you're not there? And because I really hate to see you die. So, of course, he was found out, and him and the other plotters, but he was the main one who bore the brunt of everything that happened afterwards. So he was caught, and him and the other plotters were executed. So, and it happened on November 5th, 1605. And so thereafter, this day is kind of macabre, but they still celebrate this with bonfires. There are still effigies of the guy, that are still burned. And I'm sure there are celebrations of different sizes in different parts of the UK, but the one in Sussex,
yeah,
in the UK apparently is a bigger celebration, and that's why this particular location was brought up. But it's worth noting that I've heard about this being celebrated in many parts of England for quite a long time. So it happens every November 5th. And so last year, and I was reading about this last year, of course, because of the pandemic, people were not allowed to meet in groups. So there were home size or backyard size bonfire celebrations that people had instead of a big giant group thing. So apparently people still did celebrate this night again, partying, but also with bonfires, it's a night to celebrate this plot that failed. Who knows what would have happened to England if the House of Parliament had blown up.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Or King James the First. And I do not know whether or not he'd already had children by that time. I have no idea. I'm not going to look it up. But it's something to think about, right?
Right.
It could have had long-lasting repercussions. So that is, it's more of a, I would call it a historical type of celebration, but it is still a big bonfire festival. Another festival.
I thought you were talking about Shetland.
I'll get to that.
Okay.
Now, what's interesting, and this is a pagan podcast. We talk about a variety of different things. But what is interesting is that there is a big Beltane Fire Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland, every year. And it's organized by the Beltane Fire Society. And I was reading about it. It's bonfire. So this year and last year they did digital events. But every year for them it would be on April 30th. And they started doing things back in 1988. So it's not, this is not an uninterrupted tradition from the pagan times of the ancient Celts. We know better than that. But it is something that people revived. And what's really interesting about this is that, now on their website they talk about a history of Beltane, this particular Beltane Fire Festival. But what I thought, what really kind of got my attention is what they said here. And so they talk about the history of what Beltane was, ancient Iron Age, Celtic ritual, et cetera, et cetera. And for them, they are not trying to recreate something from thousands of years ago, because we know that we can't really do that. But what they say instead is that this is a way for us to connect with nature at this time in the here and now, rather than make this grand statement by saying we are resurrecting, recreating this event of, you know, the ancient Celts that would have lived somewhere in the region. I mean, they make a point of saying that, no, we're not trying to recreate. We are having this celebration.
Right. But this is a modern... Yeah, this is a modern celebration, and yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And...
Which, I mean, at least shows some honesty that they're not, you know, that they're not trying to recreate something that was done by the pre-Christian inhabitants of the area, where, you know, there's no written language, there's really no writing to document what they actually did then. So how do we really, really know? So, yeah.
Right, and, yeah, they said the purpose of our festival is not to recreate ancient practices, but to continue in the spirit of our ancient forebears and create our own connection to the cycles of nature.
Okay.
Which I think is a really cool thing to say. And this started again. This started back in the late 80s and with academic support from the School of Scottish Studies at the University of Edinburgh.
Nice.
Yeah. Or Edinburgh, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Edinburgh. And this is a time where they have the big bonfire. It's a time of joy and revelry. It's about casting away the darkness and celebrating the light. And there's a whole thing that they do, and there's a procession and, again, big bonfire, revelry, and the whole nine yards. So there is some place in the British Isles where they have the bigger event, and there you have to get tickets to it because you can't just get in. It's become a highly popular thing to do. So if ever you want to do it on the soil of your ancient Celtic ancestors, well, there you go. Buy your tickets well in advance.
Yeah.
The next event is the event in Shetland. Now, Shetland is a
little bitty set of islands.
Yeah, a little tiny set of islands. Not very many people live there.
No.
And
north of Scotland.
Right. What is interesting about this is that...
Yes, there are things north of Scotland.
Yes.
Yeah.
You don't need shorts on the Shetland Islands, ever.
Probably not.
Even in the summer. It just doesn't get that warm. What's interesting about the Shetland Islands is that Vikings occupied the islands, and they ruled the land for about 500 years before the islands became part of Scotland in 1468. So Vikings had a very strong foothold on this group of islands for over 500 years.
Very significant part of their culture and their history.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you do DNA testing, you will find that a big chunk of the people there have DNA that directly links them to people of Norway, Sweden, and those places. So, over time, people started celebrating their Viking heritage. And in particular, what they did is, and this is not the only part of the world, so I've seen a few different things. I've seen celebrations where at the height of the sun's power, people have fire celebrations, like in Spain. And at Pagan Spirit Gathering at Circle Sanctuary, that would be a big part of it, of the main ritual every single year. No matter what the theme was, no matter what the ritual working was, at the very end, a big old bonfire that was stylized in a number of different ways with, you know, coinciding with that particular theme, would be lit at the very end with singing and people dancing around it and blah, 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 et cetera. But other cultures have done that too. So the flip side of this is doing things to get rid of the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not making any claims that these were hardcore pre-Christian practices, although it's worth noting that the one I'm going to talk about at the very end in India is not, they have no, there's no Christianity there at all.
Yeah.
And it's a practice still celebrated by Hindus. So.
Diwali?
No.
Oh.
It's different. I'll talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
So, this festival, this is the biggest of the group of festivals in Shetland. It's called Uphelia.
Yeah, Uphelia.
And it's the main Viking fire festival. It's the largest event of its kind in Europe. And this occurs on the last Tuesday of January. Interesting they should use Tuesday. Don't know why. Somebody decided it. It's a thing. And people dress up as Vikings. I mean, not...
There are people who dress up as Vikings, and others just wear other costumes.
Right. But there is a group of people called the Jarl Squad, and it's the parade's leading group. And they're the people that they lead the whole big hoo-ha. And there are other Jarl squads in other towns that have smaller Viking fire festivals. But this is the biggest one. And this occurs, again, this occurs at the end of January, and that's the biggest one. Next year, so if you want to prepare for it, it takes place Tuesday, January 25th, 2022. Because, of course, they had to suspend things for the year. But this is, it seems to be the one, yes, it's definitely the biggest one, but it also seems to be the one that kicks off the group of others, because then the others have their events afterward, like after that date. Let's see. So there's also one on the 8th of February. There's two in two different locations in Shetland. There's one on the 15th of February, two on the 22nd of February in two different places, one on the 23rd, and then there's one on March 8th, and then the last one of the season, if you will, is on March 15th. And so they occur at different locations all throughout
the Shetlands.
Shetlands. And they're different sizes.
It's a 24-hour celebration. I mean, it's something that starts one evening and it goes through for a day. There's stuff that goes on, and it ends with they have built a galley, a ship, and basically it ends with that being burned up. You know, it would take months for them to make it and stuff, and it goes up in flames at the end of the celebration, at the end of it.
Right.
It's Shetland, so it takes a bit to get to. To fly from the U.S., you'd probably have to fly from here to, like, London, and then up to Scotland, and then another flight up to Shetland.
Right.
Yeah. It sounds really, really interesting and really cool. And if you have any interest in Viking heritage, culture, history, whatever, that would probably definitely be a big thing to go to.
Yeah, I think so. And again, this was started as a way to not only honor their Viking heritage, because like I said, the people that live in Shetland, you don't have a lot of... people that have immigrated. I think I'm going to immigrate to Shetland. I don't think you hear about that too much. So the population of people have lived there, many of them have lived there for generations and generations. So this is a cool way for...
And they live stream it too.
They do. And these different towns of different sizes have smaller ones, but it's the same kind of theme, and it's a 24-hour partying festival. And for each town, and I was reading about this because not all of them have links to, like, their own little website, but some of them do, and so they have their own Jarl guard
thing
of
yeah.
people who spearhead it and do the main procession for
yeah.
it. And
yeah.
again, the theme that is the same is at the very end, it culminates in a life-size Viking ship being burned.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, a great way to burn away the coldness of winter and celebrate the coming warming days of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a cool thing.
Well, it's Shetland at the end of January. The warming days of the year are still months away.
Well, yeah, but that's right.
But
so the end of it is on March 15th.
When it all finishes.
So I'm
up.
Thinking, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
you go back and forth, and you kind of, you know, you pick a few days and
mm-hmm.
Maybe do the first one and do the last couple of ones, and by that time you're almost at spring equinox.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe it's not going to be so cold and horrible after all. so.
Yeah.
No, but it is a kind of an individual, unique thing that is part of this group of islands.
Yep. And the galley that they burn, it's a good. There's pictures of it. You can look it up. There's pictures of it. And it's a good 50, 60 feet long. I mean, it's decent size. It's large enough to actually sail in, you know, to go.
Right. And everything that I've read about it says it is a for real life size. It's not something that... a group of a few folks built in their backyard that's like 15 feet long.
Yeah.
It's a big boat. So, kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's all sorts of drinking and feasting
oh,
that
yeah.
goes on.
There's
quaffing.
Yeah.
So there, David says there's quaffing. So there's quaffing that goes on. Now the last one, since we are at 8:48, is again. And while the Shetland Viking Fire Festivals are not strictly necessarily associated with the winter solstice, because they occur at the end of the winter solstice. I think it is a way, subconsciously, where there's some sort of element of throwing off the shackles of the, you know, darkest days of winter with regard to that. But in India, and this is not the only place in Southeast Asia where they do this, at around the time of the winter solstice, this is the one that I started reading about here towards the end, and this is a festival. It's called Lohri, L-O-H-R-I,
okay.
And it occurs primarily in the state of Punjab. And so it's celebrated by Sikhs and Hindus, and what is particular about this is that it occurs around the 13th, somewhere between the 13th and 15th of January. Now, depending on what site you read, it's either celebrated on the day just before Makar Sankranti, but then on another website, I was reading, it said that Makar Sankranti is a similar version of the same ceremony that is celebrated in the rest of mainland India. But the big thing, and I think what may separate this from Makar Sankranti, is that, yes, it is celebrated with an ancient tradition of lighting bonfires, a main bonfire, but food is thrown into the fire.
Yeah.
So it's a way, again, it marks and symbolizes the end of the winter solstice and a traditional welcome of longer days. But throwing food items into the fire represents burning out the old year and starting a fresh new year. And we know that there are other cultures that have the beginning of their new year after winter solstice. And even here in the U.S. and Europe, people have big New Year's celebrations, not necessarily with bonfires, but we have the modern version of fireworks. But what makes, again, makes us different, I think, is the whole burning of food. And so as part of the celebrations, kids go from door to door to collect food items like sesame seeds, crystal sugar, jaggery, which I'm not sure what that is, peanuts, and or popcorn. So some of those things are thrown into the fire, but then others are distributed among the guests.
Okay.
Again, this happens at night. And the big part of this, and again, this is a, I'm not going to call it pagan because it's not really correct to call it pagan because that's really a European-based term for non-Christian religions. It is a, again, a Sikh and Hindu celebration, but the god in question is the Indian sun god. Surya, I think, is the sun god. And at the end of this bonfire, women get together and they perform a folk dance called the Gita, called Gita, G-I-D-D-A. So again, in this tradition, and it's interesting that it was first recorded back in the 1800s when Europeans first made their way into India, but clearly this is a celebration that's been going on for many, many hundreds of years. And as part of this as well, so it's not only about celebrating the end of the winter solstice, it's also part of a winter crop season, seasonal celebration. And one of the things that is also interesting about this is that as part of the folklore, and this is a little more recent, but it's part of the folklore of this celebration, it's linked to the tale of Dula or Dulabati. And the legend of Dulabati states that he lived in the Punjab region during the reign of this particular evil emperor, and he was regarded as a hero for rescuing Hindu girls from being forcibly taken to be sold in slave markets of the Middle East. And so that the dance in question, the Gita dance, is part of that celebration to honor this man of Indian folklore that saved girls from being sold into slavery. So it is honoring sun god. It is honoring the end of the winter solstice. And it's a seasonal celebration that's part of the winter crop season as well. So, because being in a subtropical part of the world, they don't have cold and hot seasons. They have wet and dry seasons. So, and so there's lighting of bonfires, eating foods, dancing, collecting gifts. And people wear their brightest clothes, and again, they dance the Bhangra and Gita to the beat of particular drums. So there you go. And that occurs at the end of the winter solstice.
Well, I was thinking of Diwali, because Diwali is also a festival of lights and fire and stuff, too, with fireworks and light and fire and stuff. So they actually do a couple of different fire-related festivals. In Indian culture, in India, yeah. That's why I thought of Diwali when you mentioned it, because that's what I thought you were going to get into. Okay.
Yeah. This one popped up in my research because it specifically is a bonfire festival.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Okay. Cool.
So we've taken you to Europe, and then we hopped over around the world, and of course there are many, many more festivals that occur around the world. There are a few modern ones that occur in the United States, but there are many folk festivals or non-Christian festivals or festivals tied to honoring certain saints that occur in many different places around the world. And then there's even one that honors Vikings.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you are. Okay.
And so that puts us at the end of our hour. And I knew better than to try to talk about a bunch of different things in only an hour-long format. Maybe we'll pick this up again in towards the dark time of the year. We're longing for fire festivals.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this again, because there's a bunch of others. Again, David talked about Diwali. There's also some in Japan, and there's others in just a number of different places. So I think it's a universal theme. People.
Fire.
Yeah, people have been drawn to fire, attracted to fire for millennia. We know it keeps us warm, it cooks our food, it keeps us safe from wild animals. So it's no surprise that we see celebrations that incorporate fire processions and bonfires and celebrating things seasonally incorporating fire. So
cool.
We would like to thank everybody that listened now and who will be listening in the time to come. And we have our next show, which will be on the 27th, our full moon show is going to be honoring the goddess Bast, or also called by some Bastet. Same goddess. the ET has been left off in modern translations. Bastet is Egyptian goddess of the moon, of the sun, fertility, pleasure, and protection.
Yeah.
Yes. So we will be honoring, and of course she is the goddess associated with cats. And we will be doing some fertility, pleasure, joy related celebrating.
Okay.
Here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I'd also like to mention that, of course, every week, Selena Fox has her show, Nature Spirituality, every Wednesday night.
Okay, yep. And this past Wednesday, she talked about, it was New Moon Meditations last night, did a lot of New Moon discussion. Next Wednesday, on the 19th, is Tree Spirits, attuning to and working with trees of different types. And on May 26th is Full Moon Meditations, communing with the full moon through meditation. So, New Moon Meditations last night, Full Moon Meditations 2 weeks from last night, and next week is Tree Spirits topic.
Yes, and coming up next month is Virtual PSG. The registration is open, and it is the 41st Pagan Spirit Gathering. Hopefully this will be the last virtual Pagan Spirit Gathering.
Yes.
Keep our fingers crossed. It is occurring from June 25th through June 27th via a private Facebook group. So when you register, then you get the link to the private Facebook group, and that's where everything is going to happen. And there will be some rituals. There will be...
Byron is one of the speakers.
What?
Byron Ballard is one of the speakers.
Oh, cool.
Christopher Penzack, Selena Fox, just to name a few.
Oh, cool, yeah. Beans.
Our favorite witch, who happens to be from North Carolina, Byron Ballard.
The Village Witch.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's going to be, and t-shirts are going to be going on sale very soon.
Okay. And the music, and there's going to be music too. Kellyanna will be playing, and she's one of our favorites. She's here on the East Coast, and she's been into Virginia at events. We've seen her here in Virginia a few times, and she's really fun, has some great music. We actually play her music fairly often here on CSNP. Wendy Rule is a musical guest, Spiral Rhythm, one of the mainstays from PSG. They're they really have a great stuff. We play a lot of their music here on CSNP. And another group called Primal Rhythm. I don't know them very well, but check them out. And so there's the four musical groups, acts, people, whatever, musicians. They'll be doing online concerts.
Cool.
Yeah, $75 registration.
So you can go to Circle Sanctuary's website at circlesanctuary.org, and you can find it through their drop-down menu, as well as links on their main page under events.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
They've already got their workshops posted.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Uh-huh.
All righty.
Some workshops, concerts, be a good time. Okay. No,
I was thinking the same thing.
Okay.
So, in honor of our many fire celebrations that occur around the world throughout the year, we are going to play one of our favorite songs by Spiral Rhythm called
Hele Rising.
Stay safe and blessed be.
Blessed be.
No kahiki mai kawahine opele. Mai ka aina mai opola pola. Mai ka punohu akane. Mai kea olapa I kalani.
The woman Pele comes from Kahiki, from the land of Pola Pola, from the rising mist of Kane, from the clouds that move in the sky.
Beneath the earth, the drum beats loud, smoke floats up, dark black cloud, rising, 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 ah, Pele! Deep in the earth, the drum beats low, pulsing in time to a crimson glow.
Sanctuary Network Podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNPodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.